warm.
And
But
Bubble and Join from Affilius.
Hello, it's Glenn and Chuck on the call so far.
Hi. Jeff Newman.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you doing, Glenn?
Fine, thanks. We've got Chuck and Alan.
Chuck, one of
has been a while, huh?
Hey, folks, Ross here.
You've been active on the list today, Ross.
With all your red lining.
Thanks for the work you did on that. That was helpful.
Oh, it was driving me nuts. I couldn't print the damn thing out. So I figured if I was in that boat, I'm sure there was other people too.
I was able to print it, but it had one, I think page 29 or 30 or something fouled up or something.
Yeah. Hopefully it's not too confusing to have three versions out there now.
Yeah, I think it's not really a problem for me, and your red line was useful. I agree with you totally that it's sure helpful if people would do that when there's revised versions of documents.
Especially 24 hours apart from each other, yeah.
Even any time I like to do that because...
Sure.
Just so much more time efficient and time's at a premium.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, I haven't logged on to... I haven't checked my messages since noon, and you have all these messages from Austin. Jeez.
We've had a good dialogue going.
Is it just me, or did anybody else on the call have a difficult time filing expenses from their trip to Shanghai?
That was okay for me.
Was it?
Well,
I was just looking at all these receipts, eh? It's like, what is this for, and how much money is it really?
Well, Ross, I don't think you can get reimbursed for your trip to Fish Beauty.
No, Jeff.
Hi, guys. Bruce Tonkin just joining.
Hey, Bruce. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, this is Donna from Bulk Register. Jumped on.
So we've got so far, there's Donna, Santa, Ross, and Jeff, I think I heard.
Yep.
Jeff, is Keith Drazik still there, or is he gone?
I'm sorry, did you say Keith Drazik?
Yeah.
He is gone, but he's going to probably do some consulting work for us.
Okay. So I don't have to call him back.
When did he call you?
It was probably months ago. It's, people put post-it notes on your monitor and they just kind of stick around forever.
Yeah, Ross, he hasn't been around since May of last year.
I'll throw that one out then. Now I'm looking at the map from our day trip in Amsterdam, Jeff. So just to tell you how messy my desk actually is.
Okay.
Alana Brightman.
Hi, Grub Site here.
Bruce, this is 1 hour or 2 2-hour call?
As short as can be.
Good.
Hi, Bruce. This is Steve Hodge.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, to answer your question, Alana, I don't think any longer than an hour. I tend to period on the teleconference thing we can, but I'm not intending to run that long.
Thank you.
Hi, it's Vincent from the Landy.
Hi, Vincent.
Bruce, this is Nikolai from Askia. I just sent you a mail saying that I will be on mute for the entire call, so I'll be on the train.
Okay. Morning here, so I haven't read all the emails. I'm having a quick read. So we might start it. What I propose to do, I guess,
Dave Saffron joining.
The key is, I'm seeing a lot of noise actually. Is someone in the wind or outside? The key issue is probably where we're suggesting a change to existing wording of a recommendation or suggesting an addition to an existing recommendation.
What's the document we're working from?
I'm working from the version 2 Transfer Task Force report dated 22nd of January.
Is this the one that Ross redlined or yours?
I haven't, mine basically, because I haven't read Ross's.
Okay, no problem, just wanted to check.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I haven't.
Tim Ruiz just joined the call.
Yeah, mine was simply a convenience for the group, Mary Lou, or Alana, not any sense of formality around it or anything.
Hey, Ross, I apologize, I haven't gotten a chance to look at anybody's attachments yet. Did you add comments, or did you simply...
No, it's just a red line.
Oh, so your red line just reflects Bruce's changes.
Yeah.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
So I'm not sure the best way to handle it. What I might do is just quickly run through the people on the call and see what their initial comments are, and then perhaps just go through some of the recommendations. So I'll start with Donna. Do you have any... Assume I haven't read any email for the last 11 hours, so Donna, if you could just kick off. Any general comments?
Yeah, I haven't read through the whole document yet. I was trying to get through that today. I apologize, I didn't. Do you have one question on the going back and forth, the admin contact or the registrant as listed in the losing registrars who is may authorize transfers? How are we dealing with the fact that if we don't have any way to really validate who the registrant is? I mean,
basically,
it would result to a manual process and would not fall under these time frames. Is that
the way I see that working? I think, Donna, is if the gaining registrar would primarily work via using the admin contact listed in the who is.
Not all. Some losing registrars actually list both a registrant and an admin contact. I mean, this is part of the issues with different WHOIS formats. Also, under the, I think some of the EPP registries can separately identify those two entities. So it's really just sort of saying that the registrant, in other words, the legal license holder of the domain name license, takes precedence. But if the gaining registrar has approval from either the admin contact or the registrant, then they have met the transfers policy. Now, the gaining registrar might have approval from the admin contact, and then when the losing registrar gets the transfer request, they may themselves have details of the registrant contact, and they may find from the registrant says, no, don't do this. Now, that's something that the losing registrar would know about, and the transfer could be denied in those circumstances. But if there's a dispute resolution process there, then the losing registrar would need to have proof that that they do actually have the registrant's sign off on that. So that's how I see it working.
Hey, Bruce, this is Jeff.
Yeah.
I submitted a comment with respect to that specific provision.
Right.
Number 16. It now states that only the admin or registrant listed in the losing registrar's WHOIS may authorize transfers. And I kind of requested that might be the case for RRPs, but I think we should have a statement like only the admin contact or registrant as listed in one, the losing registrar's WHOIS in the case of RRP registries, or two, the registry's WHOIS data the registry's WHOIS database in the case of EPP registries.
A good catch. That's actually covered in the comments somewhere on the right hand column somewhere else, but I hadn't picked it up in Recommendation 16, so yes, I'll put that in there.
I do have a question about that, if this is a good timing for that. This is Tim.
Yeah, I'd like to jump in on that as well, please.
Yeah, go ahead, Tim.
My concern about that is that, we're not, in the RRA, we're not required to, like, within seconds, update the thick registry with the contact change. So there could be some time lapse between when the contact data is updated and when it actually is, displayed in the registry. So I would think, for timing's sake, I would prefer, what we would probably likely want to do is to continue to use the registrar's port 43 for that, just simply because we want to make sure we get as current a data as we can, and the change always starts with the registrar, not with the registry. So if a change has been made, it's going to show, of course, at the registrar long before, or at least relatively long before it shows at the registry itself.
The issue, I think, there, Tim, is that not all registrars update their own WHOIS any faster than they'd update the registry WHOIS. So I'm not sure that fixes things. But certainly, from my point of view, I'd rather, in the case of an EPP registry, use the central WHOIS, because then I don't have to worry about data formatting.
Right.
It's one of the problems with 100 different registrars, and they all have different formats.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the WHOIS, particularly for the smaller registrars, is not particularly well maintained. In other words, it's not necessarily up to date. It's up and down, etc. So I think, and I just want to clarify this with Jeff, what in the contracts for the .biz and registry, which is seen as authoritative in the contracts?
In the contract, it's the registry.
Yeah, this is the point I wanted to make, guys, that it's what the contracts say, I think, is largely a red herring in this regard. It's all about getting good data back, and practically speaking, we stand to get better data back every single time from a registrar who is.
Yeah.
And we run the risk of getting outdated data back from the registry who is. Further, it's certainly not an EPP versus RRP thing. It's a registry model thing, and I'd want to make sure that even if I was unsuccessful in getting sort of my choice of where I get the data from, that we don't make any bad assessments around EPP versus RRP when it's fact that it's a thick versus thin consideration.
Yeah, I think that, the thing to keep in mind is that aren't we given, we have to update within 5 days or something in the RAA with any changes from the registrant, and then the port 43 WHOIS has to be updated on a daily basis. So maybe there's an enforcement issue, but stream our policy around, counting on a lack of enforcement?
Well, it's also about enforce. It's also a streamlining around what could be classed as a
sort of a marginal registry model, Tim. And quite frankly, as long as it's a common net and ORC world, I want to optimize my processes for that and then make exceptions around that, not optimize for...
Okay. But I think...
With the exception.
Hang on, Ross, just one at a time. Go ahead, Rich. Jeff?
Okay, what we need to consider, too, is, look, there are some registrars, none on this call, obviously, but some registrars that do not provide accurate data to the registry and choose to keep different information in their own whois. And I think we shouldn't be condoning that type of behavior. I mean, we're already trying to crack down on that the best we can, and most of the registrars are complying. But if we were to put in provisions that would basically provide a disincentive to keep the authoritative one, at least for our contracts, you know, to keep that being authoritative, then I think we're kind of breaking the thick registry model completely. In addition, you're right, there is going to be, I mean, I have to agree with Bruce that, you know, registrars don't necessarily change their own whois any faster than they would the registry whois. And Ross, I appreciate your statement. This is a ComNet org world, but, you know, one, we hope that will change. ORG is moving to the thick model, so that's, you know, another couple million registrations. But
that doesn't change the value of the data that I can get from Tim's whois versus PIR's whois.
Right, but what I'm saying
is, in fact, what you're doing, Jeff, is asking me to forgo my options that I've enjoyed quite nicely for the last 3 years, thank you very much, to satisfy some artificial notion of authoritativeness. It's not even authoritative to begin with, so I don't understand that in the least.
Well, I'd have the opposite view, Ross, but the wording, I think, should be perhaps the losing registrar's publicly accessible whois or the registry's whois. I just leave it as an or.
If it's a choice, I'm perfectly happy.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep, so we're agreeing on, I'll put the or, the registry whois.
Yeah, I can live with that. This is Tim. I can live with that as long as it's a choice.
Okay, that's a good catch on recommendation 16. Just back to you, Donna. Are you? Did you have any else that you wanted to add?
Bruce, right now that's as far as I've gotten to redline or write comments on mine. So I'll go ahead and pass it to the next person now.
What I'd like you to do, Donna, if you can do that in the next few days, just email it to the list and I'll pick it up there.
Sure.
Ross, you're next.
Bruce, I've got a ton here. I'd prefer to see what gets picked up by other people and then just not address those rather than sort of going through all three pages of notes. So I'd rather get a sense of the room before I go, if that's all right with you.
Fine. Jeff?
Okay. I submitted, I'm not sure if I'm going to go in order here. Oh, actually, let me pull up the documents. I can go in order. Only a couple things. Okay, that's 16 we got. Then with 27, we had talked a little bit about this, about the transfer undo command. And I would suggest wording, instead of saying that there's got to be a transfer undo command, I mean, can we word it to state something like a registry must be able to undo a transfer to enable the domain name to be set back to its previous state in the event that the transfer has occurred in contravention of the recommendations of this document?
Yeah, because that's right. It doesn't necessarily have to be a protocol, and it could be done by some other means.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So if we can do it manually, you know, because in our thick EPP registry, it's easier for us to go back, but we just don't want to develop a protocol change.
So, Bruce, to clarify that, Jeff, for you, does that impact on the text of the report at all? Like in the analysis section of the report?
I think it impacts on the wording of the recommendation because the recommendation right now is quite specific.
Correct.
Registries implement a transfer undo command. I think what Jeff is talking about, a rewording of that.
Yes, this is Chuck, and I agree with that. I was going to flag the same thing when I went back and looked at that. It says registries should be required implement that, and certainly we're able right now to undo it, but it's not through a RRP command.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's possible maybe when we implement EPP we could go implement something like that, but have to be evaluated in terms of whether that's the right way to do it or just do it manually like we do it now.
Right.
What I would suggest then is change the word command to mechanism.
Or function.
So that it reads that registries implement a transfer undo mechanism that will assist registrants and registrars. So mechanism could be a website, it could be a paper form, could be a number of different things.
So just the question for Jeff and Chuck then, are you foregoing the temporal distinctions that are included in the analysis portion then?
Not sure I understand your question.
The analysis states that transfer should be restricted for a period of 60 days. By making those modifications you're suggesting, are you foregoing that request or?
No, I think they're unrelated.
I'm just asking.
No.
So you're looking for 60 days and to. Okay. So it's. Okay.
It's just that, Ross, my concern, I think it's the same as Jeff's based on what Jeff just said, is that, especially with RRP, likely that would be a fairly significant change to RRP.
Oh, I understand that, and I have no disagreement there at all. The comment I'd make on 27 was that I'm not sure what it is that you guys are looking to optimize for with moving from 5 to 60 days.
I'm not sure that's a registry issue in that, Ross, but it is something that I've certainly heard some registrars suggest.
It was at least my understanding, it was presented as a registry complexity issue.
Yeah, it was presented by Andrew Sullivan, actually.
Yeah.
Last call. Do you want to comment, Andrew?
I said that if we're going to have something like a transfer undo command that's going to be something of a standard-ish thing, then we've got to come up with something a little safer than the possibility of just a lot of transfers can happen one right after another. I can just see somebody seeing that and thinking, oh well, here I'm going to figure out a way to game this. And so I don't know if 60 days is what we need. I don't think we talked about a period last time, but I think 60 was just a number that somebody suggested. But I think 5 is probably too few.
So Andrew, if this was a registry-only function that you guys invoked at your discretion and didn't expose via any protocol, would you still need that timing consideration?
I guess my worry is if what you have is the ability to keep transferring while these other actions are going on, while people are still able to challenge it and all the rest of it, then I can just imagine the question, okay, now which state do you want me to put it back to? And I can imagine somebody trying to take advantage of that. So what I'm trying to do is forestall that possibility by just closing it off.
So it's not a technical issue that you're trying to sort of streamline for them?
Not particularly. Although I mean there are technical implications, obviously, like if I've got to maintain 8 months of transfer data because of potential problems, then it does have an effect on my system. But
I understand. Okay. I fully understand where you guys are coming from. Thank you.
And Jeff, do you want to comment on that?
I have not thought about it as Andrew has put it, so I don't really have a comment.
And Chuck?
I didn't, that wasn't a particular issue for us at all, the 60 days or however many days it is. That doesn't mean that it doesn't have value, but it's not a concern for us. I think Andrew's point's well taken, that you could have a messy situation, and maybe even more so if you're doing this manually.
And what sort of period? I mean, it sounds like a longer period than 5, and which doesn't sound like we've got agreement on the 60. But the other side of it, I thought, that might impact this from a dispute resolution point of view, that at least there's a bit of stability and someone can raise a dispute and there's a chance of getting that dispute resolved before it sort of moves on to the next.
Right.
I can see some benefits just in terms of stability. I'm interested in feedback. I sort of picked up 60. I'd heard from some other registrars and 60 matches. There's a 60-day block on transfer after initial registration. And I thought, well, if we use the same period, whatever that period is, at least I'd rather not have lots and lots of different times, because I think that creates more confusion. But I'm open to comment.
This is Tim. GoDaddy's currently does that. We currently don't allow transfer after it's transfer within 60 days of a new transfer. And the reason we picked 60 days was simply because it jived with the same time period for a new registration. So that was our reasoning behind that time period.
Okay, I might just put in a comment there that the time period was chosen to match the initial registration period.
Yeah, I think you should qualify that, though, Bruce, with some sort of understanding of how it impacts on the dispute resolution process, because there's, for every case where you're not going to want to transfer it within that 60 days, there's an exception that states that you're going to want to. So in the cases of hijacking and slamming and fixing things, I'm going to want to get it back, and I want to make sure that that's possible.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, they're not saying anything that it shouldn't be able to be retrieved.
Correct. It just all depends on the retrieval mechanism.
So yeah. What you're saying, Ross, is you'd be okay with a 60-day or some other period as long as there is a fast-track retrieval?
I wouldn't.
Wait, sorry, this is Nikolai. I just dropped out. Tim, could you just repeat?
Sorry, Nikolai, go ahead.
Sorry, Bruce. I just dropped out when Tim was making his, I assume, reasoning for entering in a 60-day hold for transfers.
The reason we picked the number 60 was because it was in line with the 60 days after a new registration. If that's what you mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So what is the recommendation that we're looking for here?
Talking about recommendation 27, which talks about the registries implement transfer undo command. We're talking about changing the wording of that to that registries implement a transfer undo mechanism. And I think there might have been some concern here that the actual undo mechanism might take 60 days. That's not my reading of it, and maybe I need to clarify the wording. The 60 days is referring to that there's enough time for dispute resolution, etc., to be completed before the name is transferred yet again. And also means it's less complex at the registry end because you're not having to maintain lots of history, so that if a dispute was resolved in, say, day 35, and in the meantime you've had 10 transfers because it's a transfer every 5 days, then it's going to be very hard to manage.
Yeah, okay. I wouldn't be able to support the recommendation as it's put there with regards to 60 days.
What would you want to see then, Nicola?
I would prefer not to see any limit of it at all.
And this simply
due to the fact that what often happens in the cases of I'm fully aware that this could. And it does lead today to laundering of names, but I think I don't think that the transfer implementation I don't think it's within the scope of the transfer implementation task force to be dealing with that. But I simply believe that what we experience today is that people either have erroneous or semi non-authorized or I didn't understand this transfer kind of issues, so it ends up being an impediment for them to transfer straight back to the registrar that they came from.
Hey, can I comment on that, Bruce? This is Tim.
Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, I guess, you know, to me, what the recommendation would mean, and maybe that's not where we're going, and why Nikolai is concerned, is that it should be at least at the option of the registrar to not allow the transfer within 60 days. I mean, we certainly don't intend to use it as a means of, you know, denying transfers for any reason whatsoever. In fact, the whole purpose is so that we don't lose control,
so quickly that we can't work with the losing registrar to get it back to him if there was a mistake or something was wrong, because that's the kind of thing we've faced.
Mm.
So the whole point of it is so that we can more easily work with the losing registrar to get things straightened out when they haven't gone right, and then avoid
a dispute
resolution.
If
it gets to the dispute, then I think whatever the resolution of the dispute is, we must adhere to it.
Go ahead, Nick.
It's just the fact that we see. I mean, on our end at least, we see so many creative interpretations of policy at the moment.
And a lot of them, are created by options within the system, not by specifications.
Yes, and I'm seeing, and what I just heard Tim saying was that this was an option.
Correct, I'm agreeing with you. I'm agreeing with what you're saying.
Okay, good. And that's why I think that the only way out of I do see this as a rather small issue, but I think that's why we have this implementation task force, which is. One, to look at the good and the bad proposals, but two, to put forward a very concrete specification of how this will happen, and that's why I don't I wouldn't support all these loose ends, and I don't support the, but unfortunately I had to be on mute at that time. I don't support the rather loose specification that I can either use. The registry who is, in the case of thick registries, or that I can use the registrar who is. I think that I simply think that we are the more options we give, the likelier are we going to see abuse of the specifications.
Yeah, I guess the thing against that is trying to get agreement. I mean, I'm agreeing with you in principle, but we can't always agree on the on what that concrete specification is, and that's part of the problems, I guess, of consensus policy making. But if I could just get some clarity on this point, there are two ways this could be implemented. One way is that it can be done at the registry, which is how the initial registration is handled. So the registry blocks the transfer if it's done within 60 days of any transfer. The other option is that they are not available to the registrar, which is covered under recommendation 24, one of the allowable reasons denying a transfer. Personally, I'd rather see it's done at the registry, whatever the period of time is, for the very reason that you point out, Nikolai, because then it's not something that's variable, it's a fixed. And it's much easier to code around a fixed scenario. So what do people think? I'm hearing Tim say that you would rather it be at the registrar's discretion whether you deny a transfer. Is that right, Tim?
Well, you know, I would be totally fine with it being, you know, something built into the registry, as long as, you know, when there is a problem and someone wants to get it straightened out, that they're not hampered from doing that. I mean, that's all we're concerned about.
Yeah. Would that be covered perhaps under the transfer undo mechanism?
Yeah.
Bruce,
yeah.
This is Chuck. Can I jump in there?
Yes, go ahead, Chuck.
Yeah, it seems to me that there are ways of having it both ways. If you have an undo command or an undo mechanism, that could be used even if you have the 60-day or whatever window you have to restrict those. And also, it seems to me that one advantage of doing it at the registrar level is there's no reason that two registrars who are working together to resolve a problem even before it goes to a dispute resolution can't communicate mutually to the registry and say, hey, we've agreed that this should be undone, even if it's in that 60-day window. So I don't see these things necessarily in conflict.
No, I think from what Nikolai's saying, I think he's got a valid point that I've seen this in the Australian environment, which is an EPP environment. You do get situations where a registrant's been confused and then they approve the transfer. Now, as far as the registrars are concerned, they've done everything right. You know, they've followed the policy. It's just that the registrant hasn't understood what's going on. And then when they find out what's going on, they want to turn it back. And I think what Nikolai is saying is that they shouldn't have to wait 60 days to turn it back.
I'm not suggesting that they wait 60 days. I'm suggesting that it happened
just,
during the 60-day window.
Just summarizing the discussion. And so then the issue is that on the other side, we're talking about having some limit there so that a name can't just be continuously transferred between multiple registrars, so involving, say, 10 registrars over a 50-day period. I think if we're talking about reverting a name because the registrant made a mistake, that would be covered under the actual undo mechanism itself, is what I would suggest. And so I think that addresses that issue of being able to turn it back if a mistake has been made. And that would be, you know, obviously at the approval of the registrant. So I think when we come to the actual implementation and how that actual transfer undo mechanism works, that mechanism should be able to take into account the ability for a registrant or admin contact to reverse the transfer as part of that process, which is really part of why that recommendation originally was put in, I believe.
Yeah, but you know, one of the questions I'd have around that, though, Bruce, would be that if we're willing to roll back once, what's stopping us from rolling back five or six times? What's the convenience that we're gaining by somehow optimizing for these extreme cases where names are getting laundered, but sort of making it more difficult for the more standard occurrences? If in fact we do have that transfer undo mechanism in place.
Well, I don't think it's making it any more difficult to do the transfer undo. Or you're just basically saying rather than use the transfer undo, you just use the actual transfer mechanism.
No. What I'm saying is that if we can roll it back to one registrar, it back one state, we can move it back five or six states. And I think technically speaking, even operationally speaking, there's not a big difference between those two exercises.
Yeah, but the number of parties that would be required to approve those sort of things becomes somewhat larger.
And all the indemnification agreements and all that baloney.
Yeah, I mean, I agree purely at an engineering level, but in terms of the practicalities, because it's not just engineering, it's human involvement that you would need to do those things. So I don't think you're losing that much by putting a bit of a break in there, because I think there's ways of undoing the break, which is the transfer undo. And I don't think there's too many scenarios where you take the opposite view, where you hop between registrars every few days. That's not the behaviour I've noticed in the market. Most people are making a decision, you know, once a year, once every 2 years, once every 6 months. It's not something I'm constantly changing between registrars every 60 days.
But what it does do is force every single instance where I can't come to an agreement with the other registrar that something should be done, i.e. there should be a correction made, it forces every single one of those instances to the dispute resolution or to wait for the 60-day period. Right now, under the current process, there's always the option, if the registrant is still under control of that domain name, to retransfer at any time that they wish. So you're limiting that to a sort of six times a year event, as opposed to an anytime they want event, and that's where my concern is stemming from.
But I guess, Ross, if I may, this is Alana.
Yep.
Right now, there are some registrars, as I understand it, who limit the post-transfer period anyway. So you're going to come across those instances today anyway. It seems to me that where a registrar may be using it for a bad purpose, such as just stopping transfers, you could use an undo mechanism, whereas right now you don't have a mechanism like that. But in other cases, it's if somebody wants to transfer, they're going to get stuck more likely because of a good precautionary reason. You see what I'm saying? You're sort of in no worse situation. You're more likely not to be any worse off, and in fact to have a new way of addressing the issue, than you are to in fact be worse off, because for the most part, people will want to transfer again so quickly.
Yeah, I guess one of my goals with the new processes, though, was actually come out ahead, not come out the same, if you know what I mean.
I think you are coming out ahead, I guess.
Yep.
I think you're coming out ahead, certainly when it comes to the precautionary stance, right, the safety of a name that may be getting stolen. And you're even coming out ahead, I would say, in terms of those registrants that legitimately want to transfer again for whatever reason, which is just terribly unlikely. because you do have an undo mechanism. Because those registrars that are going to use it for bad purpose tomorrow are using it for bad purpose today.
Yeah, but in each case, though, to use that transfer undo command, I needed to either spend $1,500 and file a dispute or get agreement from that other registrar. And in 99% of the cases, it's going to be unlikely I'm going to get that agreement, meaning it's going to cost me $1,500 or wait 60 days. And I'm not crazy about that option. Because it doesn't seem like much of an option.
Yeah, you're assuming, I guess one of the things that we haven't really specified is what the transfer undo mechanism would be, Ross. And that's probably a subject of a detailed discussion, but it wouldn't necessarily need the agreement of the registrar. It might be something that the registrant can do. A bit like the redemption grace period concept, you know.
I'm making certain assumptions as to what it looks like based on task.
Yeah, you're sort of assuming that it's something that's used after dispute resolution.
Correct.
Or after two registrars sign off. It doesn't necessarily need to be that way. It could be that a registrar would have to, this is undo, remember, it's not sort of approving yet another transfer. To do an undo, it might just be that the registrar can provide sufficient paperwork and supporting documentation from the original registrant to say that they want it to be undone, just the same way that you need to provide that for getting approval for a redemption grace period.
Take a page out of the nominate playbook, in other words.
And what's that page?
Oh, just simply where the registry can intervene at the request of the registrant.
Yeah. I think we're probably spending too much time on this one point. I'll sort of put some of these caveats in the comments and issues. I'll change the actual recommendation so it says mechanism rather than command. And then we put these issues in here. And then when we actually come to specify how that transfer undo mechanism works, that mechanism needs to take into account those. So I'm not quite sure where I'm up to now. Who was I talking to? Jeff, do you have any?
Yeah, one last one. Sorry.
Sorry, Jeff.
That's okay. It's on number 9. And this I just wanted to clarify. I think the comments kind of say this already, but
Is this 9 in table 1 or 9 in table 2, Jeff?
I'm looking at 9 in table
2, I think he is.
Okay, great.
I'm looking at the proposed revised text. It's even the existing recommendation. I mean, are we saying that the losing registrar can independently confirm a transfer even in the EPP case where there's a auth info code? Or is that really just limited to ComNet space?
Or how are you doing that now, Jeff? Are you immediately completing the transfer upon receiving the code in some form? Or?
No. In an EPP registry, in the protocol is the same effectively after the transfer. So after a transfer, a losing registrar can approve or deny the transfer.
Right.
And I think with the policy, though, because there's an auth info code that's gained, I mean, if a losing registrar wants to verify, I'm just afraid that it's going to turn into no difference in the RRP.
Well, it really isn't a lot different than RRP right now, is it?
Well, I think the fact that there's an auth info code basically should be used to show that there's confirmation.
Some authority has been
in. Right, but I mean, as long as the rest of the process is the same, why would that part all of a sudden be different?
Well, because I guess the fear that I have from an EPP registry is that it literally becomes no different than an RRP, and that registrars do not take the auth info code as being confirmation. And I think if registrars act as if that is not confirmation, then there really is no advantage for the auth info code. So if we're going to have that, I think we need to have a statement saying that it's presumed, if there's an auth info code, that's confirmation of the registrant's intent. But
yeah, I think.
Well, you know,
one comment, Jeff, is that the process as it's written now, not just 9, but generally, is that the gaining registrar must get authority using the standard form of authorisation. So certainly in Australia we have an EPP registry. It is two phase. There's the provision of the auth info code, and then there's the acceptance of the standard form, because somebody can be misled to be providing that auth info code. You know, someone can say, you need this auth info code so I can do a change of delegation, and then what they actually use it for is to do a change of registrar. So there's always a need to actually send a message or have a mechanism where there's a standard form which basically says you agree to transfer from registrar A to registrar B, and you sign off on that. So then I think what this process is dealing with is how you actually get that final confirmation. Either the gaining registrar or the losing registrar could do that. The current recommendation says that the gaining registrar is the only one able to do that. And by removing the word solely, this allows a little bit more flexible choice into the process, because some registrars, by agreement, would choose to let the losing registrar do that final check. So I don't think it's that different between EPP and RRP. I think it's really a principle you're trying to get to there.
But at that point, I mean, how would that work out? In other words, if the gaining registrar submits the auth info, the gaining registrar gets the standard form of authorization, which that's fine.
Yep.
You know, they have them sign off.
Yeah, but this was assuming the gaining registrar doesn't do that, Jeff. So it's saying that the gaining registrar just sends the auth info code and then leaves it to the losing registrar to send out the standard form of authorization.
Oh, see,
I don't
get that from the language then. I mean, I wouldn't interpret it that way. If I were being the lawyer that I am, just looking at provision 9, even in the context of the rest of the document, to me, that would not include the standard form of authorization. So to me, it says, even if a gaining registrar submits a standard form of has a standard form of authorization, submits the auth code, it still gives the option for the losing registrar to employ its own confirmation process.
That's what the recommendation says at the moment, yes. What we're saying is, by removing the word solely, what that allows is that the losing registrar could also independently verify the registrant's intent. So in the notes to that section, I've said the removal of the word solely provides some flexibility in implementation that will allow a losing registrar to take on the responsibility of validating the registrant request in cooperation with the gaining registrar.
I think if I hear what Jeff is saying correctly, though, what we do lose through that, and I touched on this in my notes as well, what we do lose through that is a strong sense of predictability, specifically as it relates to both process from a registrar perspective, but also from an operations perspective as a registrar, and even from a legal perspective, like a liability perspective. So, I can see where you're going with that, Bruce, and I certainly haven't spoken against it in the past, but I think that the modification made might go further than what you're actually intending to.
Right. In addition, if that's the case, I think you would need to add something to say, however, this does not preclude the losing registrar from exercising its option. Basically, you have to say within the 5-day or whatever day period that is, because I wouldn't want the losing registrar to knack and then say, well, I'm in the process of confirming, so I'm not going to allow it to go through.
Yeah, and that's still covered, though. The losing registrar can't knack if they don't get a response at that point.
Well, I could say, well, I just sent it out on the 5th day, and I'm waiting.
Well, that's also covered elsewhere in these documents, that the losing registrar needs to send within 24 hours of receiving the transfer request.
Okay, I guess. And for the same reasons Ross has, I'm still not...
Yeah, look, again, with all of these things, it's a matter of trying to get agreement by the whole industry. And I'm trying to chair this and find out where the consensus is. So, I would agree with you. The more specific you make, the better. But you've got to get agreement to make it that specific. And I've certainly heard from Network Solutions and others that they don't agree with that wording and they'd like it to be more flexible. So bear in mind that we're trying to achieve consensus. And it's not in my power to sort of say, all right, well, let's make it more and more specific, because you've got to get agreement when you do that.
Actually, with all due respect to your position as chair of the group, Bruce, I'd have to disagree with your
characterization is the purpose of this group is to be getting to actually go out and get consensus around these things. I think the purpose of this group is to analyze the implementability of these recommendations and nowhere near forge consensus. You know, in other words, there's a big difference between figuring out whether we can do this or not and forging agreement across the industry.
Let me qualify that though, Ross. I think that the implementability of whatever solution is arrived at depends on strong support from registrars. And if you don't have that, I think the implementability is in question.
Can I make a recommendation? Just Bruce, is there a way in the notes to link that section to the section that you were talking about of the time period? So just in the notes to it, say, you know, the section A is meant to be done within the time period specified in section, whatever section.
Yep, I'll do that.
Thanks. Just in case there's like a legal record and this comes up in the future.
Okay, but any other comments on this recommendation 9?
This is Alana. Tim Ruiz and I both had similar comments that we had posted this morning. Is this a good time to talk about it? This is about a part of the recommendation, which was about when a losing registrar may send any kind of emails aside from the confirmation email.
Yeah, it was that second paragraph in the comments on recommendation 11.
I'm sorry, I thought it was on 9. Sorry about that.
That's related.
So I'm a bit lost. Can you just run that by me again?
It's the second paragraph, Bruce, under comments on recommendation 11. Where, you know, so the 24-hour time limit may need to be revisited. This is if, however, the period is extended to accommodate smaller registrars, the larger registrar should not be able to send marketing communications more than a time limit, say an hour before the authentication message is sent.
Right. And your comment, sorry?
My concern is that it sounds, to me, dangerously close to kind of, limiting competition or something,
I don't see the point of it being included there. Yeah, what I'm trying to do is stop gaming of the system there, basically, where it's deliberately delayed when there's no reason to be. I mean, I can understand a larger registrar has an automated system for sending out the actual authentication message. What I don't want to do is see, instead of the smaller registrars saying, oh, we need more time, I'm hearing the bigger registrars are the ones that are raising this issue. And they don't need 24 hours. They could do it within seconds because it's fully automated.
You know,
so
that's
really what I'm trying to get at there.
But
I'm happy to consider alternate wording, but I'm really trying to say that I think the 24-hour limit is reasonable until a small registrar claims that it's not.
I do think, though, that this is Alana, that all registrants should be treated equally. So there's got to be a happy medium there.
Are we still on 9 or is this on to 11 now?
We're under 11, I think. On the comment of 11.
Yeah, I apologize. I brought it up as a comment to 9,
yep.
Which is where I remembered it. I would rather see us deal with the issue of when and how that confirmation notice goes out,
right.
Not what happens to any other communications that a company might have with its customers.
Fine. I'm happy to remove that section of text and just leave the 24-hour limit, maybe revisit it, and we revisit it at the time. Because, I mean, I thought about that when I put it in there. I agree, you're starting to get into the area of marketing. It's really just perhaps flagging that the 24 hours should be real. In other words, there's some real reasons for it, not just because I'd like it to be longer. Okay, anything else?
My last comment, I guess, is, the recommendation in the Transfer Task Force report would be, was something to the effect of that, you know, for the dispute process, there would need to be set up another implementation committee, I guess. Are we going to comment on that? how are we going to address that at all, or are we going to just punt that to the next implementation committee?
Yeah, I think we'll take that to the next, Jeff, because I think that's it's a big topic on its own.
You're talking about the standardized form of authorization, Jeff?
Yeah, and that's another one of those, that's right.
Yeah, two of them, the standard form of authorization and also the...
Yeah, I think those are two big areas, and I had attempted to have a go at a standardized form, and I passed it around to a few registrars, and I think everyone just thought, let's try and get the overall principles right, and then we then can work on some of that detail.
Okay, should we say something in the implementation report then that says that this, you know, this will be worked out later?
Yeah, I think it's kind of... I'm happy to put that in the comments here.
And that's it for me.
Okay, let me get that down. Send form of authorization and dispute resolution. Okay, Alana, are you next on the list?
Hi, sorry. I don't think I have anything. I may, as I keep going through the draft, I'm sorry, I just haven't had a chance to.
Okay. Steve
Mihalovich? Yeah, actually, I haven't gotten a chance to go fully through it, but I think, Bruce, we've talked about this before. You know, our biggest concern was certainly Section 9 with the words, the gaming registrar is solely responsible for the transfer authorization. And I still do share the concern regarding if the gaming registrar has ultimate responsibility and there is no command sent to the registry to stop that transfer, then the transfer is processed even though there's no authentication. And I think that certainly leaves us a bit exposed for fraudulent transfers.
Now, I think, that paragraph's not to... You interpreted that paragraph to mean that there wouldn't be an ACNAC period? Or...
Kind of interpreting it as though it would be an auto ACK.
Okay.
Meaning if nothing happens, then it goes through.
Yeah, I think that the concern, as I understand it, Jeff, that Network Solutions has here is that they're assuming the gaming registrar is not doing their job, and then they're saying, well, if they're not doing their job, and we decide to confirm that, if we don't get a response, there is an auto ACK, and that is correct. And that's really been the crux of the whole transfers dispute, actually.
Right.
Basically, we've tried to reach a compromise, and I think the compromise has been that, you know, there is dispute resolution, there is a transfer undo mechanism, there are some other things that mean... and then we've also talked in this document about enforcement, so that if a gaming registrar is found to be not following the process, then there is a mechanism where a losing registrar can then deny the transfers if they haven't had confirmation. So those are sort of all the compensating factors, I guess.
Yeah, I think our biggest concern is the potential damage that would be done prior to that decision being reversed or being uncovered.
Yeah.
And that's certainly our biggest concern.
Yeah, and in any case, these things can be abused, and all you can do is try and put mechanisms to protect, and part of that is using standardized form of authorization so somebody knows what it is that they're actually agreeing to. It's been a problem in the past as well. So I think we've put a number of improvements in this overall policy that actually reduces the incidence of abuse from the gaming registrar. Likewise, we've put a number of things in here to reduce abuse by the losing registrar purely because they're concerned about losing registrants.
Yeah, I do think the Transfer Task Force mentions as one of their four key points is security, and I'm not clear that we're seeing really any areas where we're addressing security. There's certainly a lot of processes address some of their other issues and some of the other issues that we need to address collectively as registrars, but I think we're still exposed to security. So.
Yeah. And one of the mechanisms on security is actually EPP itself, as Jeff pointed out. EPP itself gives a security improvement, and the VeriSign registry has stated publicly that it will be moving to EPP. So that's another consideration, that security itself gets dealt with by a decision to use auth info codes either now or in the future. But I can certainly put a note in there that, you know, security is something that is an issue, and that auth info codes can assist.
I'll send you complete comments once I get an opportunity to fully review the document.
Good, thank you. Vincent from Name Bay.
Yes? That's
all? Nothing to add.
Okay. Nikolai? Still on the train?
Sorry, it takes me a little bit of time to get the mute button off the cell phone. No, and unfortunately, I don't even have the document in front of me.
Okay. I know the feeling. It's when I'm driving, I'm always trying to remember in my head what's in the document as well.
Yes.
Okay, Chuck.
Yeah, I don't think I have any additional comments. I had the one that I've already addressed following up to Jeff's comment, but I don't think I have any new comments now.
Okay, is there any other registry? Oh, Andrew Sullivan?
No, I don't think I have anything additional. The only thing I had to say about it was on the, I guess, mentioned on the list, but I guess we already discussed it, so.
Bruce. This is Bruce Beckwith with PIR. I joined a little while ago. Just the discussion was going so well, I didn't want to interrupt. But we, too, at this point, don't have any further comments.
Thanks, Bruce. Okay.
I've still got my three pages, Bruce.
Can I have one other comment, Bruce? This is Tim.
Tim, sorry. Yes, I didn't have you on my list either. I'll go with... Ross first, did you want to comment,
Ross? Just some, I guess you call them formative notes. Through Table 1 and Table 2, all of the recommendations of the task force have been paraphrased, and in some cases I think they're inaccurately represented. I don't think we get any economy out of paraphrasing, so it's probably more...
Ross, what did you... I don't understand that comment. Can you just go back again?
Through Table 1 and Table 2...
Yeah.
The recommendations of the task force have been paraphrased.
Well, the table two is an exact copy of the recommendations because I've copied them word for word. There's no paraphrasing in there. Table one is certainly reduced, so I'm happy to remove paraphrasing from table one, but table two is exact text from the task force.
Good. At least in table one, the paraphrasing is inaccurate in a few places, so we shouldn't...
Okay, so for table one... I should just remove the description and just leave the numbers there?
Or just use the exact text from the recommendations.
Yeah, but which is probably going to be long. What I'll do in Table 1 then is just remove the description and just leave it as the actual recommendation number, and then people can reference the table below.
The second note I would have would be on page 2 you refer to, and also where appropriate additional or alternative text has been included, and I believe that's referring to table 2. You may want to consider breaking out the additional comments and the alternative text into separate tables themselves, just for maximum clarity. So you end up with three tables around that, and I can provide you with an offline example if you want.
I'll consider it.
Sure.
I'm not that keen on changing things majorly at this point.
These are just readability questions or comments. You make the note on page 2 that you've got new items added after 29. What does that refer to?
That's old text that should have been removed. Whereabouts is that?
On page 2. Also on page 2, the legend indicates high, medium, low, high impact or support, etc. If you actually apply the legend to the charts, I believe you're mapping it not to support or impact, but to something else. So it kind of, you may want to just limit the legend to note impact or use something more precise.
So where's that? The under legend.
You've got high and low used under the cost and support. It just, for somebody walking in and reading this, it doesn't seem to map directly to the tables.
Okay, I'll have a look. Maybe you can send me what you think would be better wording.
Just high and low.
Rather than medium.
Well, no, because the column headers themselves actually define what context high and low.
Oh, okay. Remove that from the legend. Okay, I understand.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. And the positive and negative is probably not even using that. So, yeah, I could pretty much get rid of most of that legend, apart from perhaps say that not applicable means not applicable.
Right, which I think is a standing.
Yeah.
That's...
I mean, this table was derived from Chuck's, and I didn't change any of this text. So it's still in draft from the point of view of readability, so these things are helpful.
And, you know, and rather than going through now, you know, every single note I've got on every single recommendation here, I just wanted to reiterate my earlier comment that I think we are drastically straying from the scope of authority for this particular group, and that until we actually start discussing the impact of the recommendations as opposed to formulating new ones, I think we're going to be off our mark with this report. And I'll pass on these notes to the committee later on today.
Sure. Okay. Thanks, Ross. Tim.
Just really kind of a minor issue on recommendation 24. And it really seems minor even more so now at this point, but I will mention anyway since I sent it to the list. Just where it says, upon receiving any updates to who is data elements from the registered name holder, registrar shall promptly update its database used to provide the public who is access. I just wanted to be sure that was clear, that we weren't trying to recommend any new definition of what prompt is, and that it's still as defined in the RRA.
Whereabouts is this, sorry, Tim?
It's the second paragraph of the comments of recommendation 24 in Table 2.
Yeah, I could put just consistent with its contractual obligations or something, if you like.
Yeah, because RRA just says, you know, at least daily.
Yeah, sure.
And then I think there was some discussion started, and I don't know if Ilana will mind if I mention this or not, but there was some discussion started about the limitation on the special port for transfers, and I don't know if that's a topic for discussion at this time or not, but... we'd certainly have some thoughts about that.
No,
Sorry, just run that one by me again.
Ilana had raised the issue about whether or not we should be allowing some kind of limitations on the access to the special transfers port.
I think this who is area is probably something that ultimately will be taken up under the who is task force into the future, because what we're really addressing is abuse of port 43. And the fact that at the moment everyone's supposed to be using port 43 is supposed to be full open access, and the reality is that, you know, there's all sorts of problems with that, and a likely solution to those problems is potentially using a special who is. I kept all this in the comments rather than trying to suggest any changes to the recommendations,
because
I think it's really input that should probably go into the Who Is Issues report, which is due in the Names Council, I think, in March anyway.
Right.
So rather than try to spend too much time on trying to define special Who Is, I'm really just sort of trying to capture the information at this point for future use.
Because that really wasn't a part of the task force recommendation.
That's correct.
So,
absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Any other comments?
Bruce, it's Grant here. When you've gone through your registries and registrars, I'm happy to give you a couple more comments.
Yeah, go ahead and do that now, I think, Grant.
Bruce, I haven't had the opportunity of going through the table entirely, and I've checked through some of the emails. I guess a concern I have generally in the process that we're following at the moment is that there seems to be... this group seems to be going well beyond simply tackling the task of implementation. And I use as an example your Table 2 recommendation number 9. And what I see now written here is in the comment area, this is an area of some controversy amongst registrars. Some registrars have proposed the losing registrar be the one initially validating the registrant request and that the gaining registrar can take over if the losing registrar fails to receive the authorization. That comment, I'm sure, is accurate, and I'm well aware of that tension between who gets to control the process, the gaining or losing registrar. I cannot see, though, that it has any impact on implementation. It is an issue which was debated long and hard by the Transfers Task Force, and at the end of the day, the Transfers Task Force took as its guidance where it was informed the problem lay. And the problem lay with regard to transfers, as we were informed, very, very clearly to be a frustration in legitimate transfers, not in slamming. And again, that is not to say that slamming doesn't occur and that we shouldn't ensure that processes that we are seeking to create can't be implemented in a manner which minimizes slamming. But my concern is if this is what's going to come out of this implementation task force, we're on the wrong track. That has nothing to do with implementation.
Bruce, can I jump in again?
Yeah, go ahead, Chuck.
I totally disagree, Grant. I think we're working under an assumption that because a task force agrees on something, and this is not at all to minimize the work of the task force, that it is implementable. The way the registry and registrar contracts are worded, they only have to implement a policy if it can be demonstrated that there is consensus support for that. Very hard to demonstrate consensus if the most impacted constituency is not strongly behind it, and I say that's registrars. Number two, you know, there has to be some changes to the registry and registrar agreements. If registries and registrars are not supportive of those changes, there's a real snag in the ability to implement these changes. And so my assumption, as I've repeated several times, and I apologize for repeating it, is that if we don't come up with a policy that has strong support from registrars in particular, because of the amount of impact on them, I think we're going down a path that will not be implemented.
Yeah, Chuck, I hear you loud and clear, and you are right. You have made this statement, and I'm fully aware of it, that in order for the recommendations to be implemented, it needs to result in contractual changes, and those contractual changes, as is relayed to us, will only occur if there is strong consensus support amongst the constituencies to whom the contractual changes will impact. But what I'm, I guess, and if that's therefore your and this group's view as to, quote, impact, then I guess I'm a little confused as to our purpose. I thought the purpose of the, and when we're talking about impact, we're talking about the impact of a recommendation on the business, on the processes, on the outcomes of the interested parties, being the registrants, registrars, and registries, not the impact on gaining consensus in order to enable change to occur. Maybe I'm wrong there. But if that's the case, then what we're going through here is a rehash and a lobbying exercise, not a review of the, as I say, the operational and structural impacts of the recommendations.
I would phrase it differently, Grant. I wouldn't call it a rehashing or starting over. I would call it refining so that there's strong enough support to make it happen. Because if we go down this path and continue to spin our wheels and we come up with something and it's not implementable because there's not enough support for it from those who count the most, where are we at? We've gone nowhere.
Yeah, look, this is Bruce Tonkin again. I think what Grant's commenting on is I should review the comments for content such that they are genuinely referring to implementation issues and not trying to rehash work that's already been done in the task force. So I think I've tried to set the context to some degree in some of the wording, and I guess what you're saying, Grant, is that context is probably already in the transfer task report, and certainly that comment about, you know, my first line there, as you say, this is an area of some controversy amongst registrars, is trying to imply that we're trying to recreate the work of the task force at that point.
Bruce, I think the issue is that Chuck and I are interpreting the word impact in different manners, and maybe he's right, and maybe the crucial impact, which is being considered by this group and needs to be considered by this group, is the impact of not gaining, or put it positively, the impact needing to gain consensus. I'm sorry, I didn't realize that was the impact which was being reviewed by this this group. If that is the case, then Chuck, right on mark, and what you're coming up with here by way of suggested changes to the recommendations are probably where it needs to go. It's my concern, though, is we may end up with a beast which is bugger all different from what we've got at the moment.
Yep.
And at the moment, we have it such that the losing registrar is in control, and that seems to be really at the core of the user's frustration. And even though we may, through the recommendations and implementation, improve processes of authority and what have you, I suspect that, and my concern is, that we may not tackle the root cause.
Yeah, I have to say, though, to go back on that, Grant, there is very little change to the recommendations of the task and what's been put here. And the majority of the changes that have been suggested are slight wording changes that clarify some things and actually have a direct impact on implementation, in that depending on the exact wording, that can affect pretty dramatically the way some things are done today and some of the problems that occur today. So what I've tried to do is make hardly or very few changes to the recommendations, but to try and put the comments and issues that have been raised into the right-hand column, because that's issues that registrars have raised. And I think I need to reread the way I've worded those so that, as you say, they're very clear that they're related to implementation. At the same time, Chuck is quite correct in that where some of the particular recommendations do not or have not had what you would call perhaps strong consensus support within the registrar constituency, if there are some suggestions we can make here, given that we've got most of the major registrars that have concerns on the call, the starting position they might have had was that, no, I don't support the whole Transfers Task Force report. I think this exercise has moved some of those registrars a lot further down the track, partly just because they have a greater understanding of what the recommendations mean. And then at the same time, by very small changes to the wordings in some cases, we can increase the overall support. I think, as Chuck says, we have a far better outcome because we have buy-in. And I think that's one of the critical things we need to consider here, because if we don't have buy-in, all the way down the track, you can just keep, you know, there's so many opportunities. The board doesn't decide on this until March. They'll lobby the board members. Even after the board decides on it, the ICANN staff have to create these things into a legal document. There's scope there. So if you don't get buy-in early on, there are so many opportunities to create problems down the track that I think where we can, it's worth pointing out that, you know, a change here could be beneficial. But I agree with you, the primary purpose of this group is to deal with implementation.
Thanks.
David Safran, did you want to comment?
No, I don't have any particular comment. A lot of the reasoning I can't fully appreciate, not being a registrar or registry.
Sorry, what was that, David?
I said a lot of the rationale I can't properly evaluate, not being a registrar or registry.
Right, okay, yeah. Yes, I think the main thing is to make sure that, and I think this has been a very useful exercise from this point of view, that the recommendations from the task force are fully understood by registries and registrars. And I think, you know, having yourself and Grant and Ross as well that were, and I think Jeff involved in the task force itself, does help clarify what the actual meaning of a particular recommendation is. Are there any other comments at this point? Otherwise, I will try and have another draft out. I'll try and get another draft out the next day or so based on the comments I read on the list, and I think we'll work on the draft itself via the list.
What would you prefer for a deadline for comments on your next draft, Bruce?
Well, I guess what we should do is have another teleconference in a week's time from today, and that'll be the final teleconference, because at the end of the day, I'm going to submit what I've got on the 31st of January. My time frame would be, if I can get comments by... What's extremely useful is for me to get comments in the next 24 hours, because I'll try and get another draft out in about 24 hours' time. After that, then I'm actually going to be away for a few days, so I'll probably wait again until the time we have the next teleconference. And then I'll do an edit at that time. So that's the next 24 hours is most useful. Other than that, keep getting your comments through, and we'll discuss them in the next teleconference. And I'll do the final draft on the 31st.
Bruce, is the teleconference call same time, same station next week?
Yes. Any other comments, final words? Okay, well, thank everyone for taking the time and effort on this call, and particularly those that have put specific comments to the list. It's very helpful.
Thank you, Bruce.
Thanks, Bruce.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
Thanks, bye.
Thanks, bye.